And the court will proceed to the fifth case, the United States v. McGaughey. Mr. Cook will just wait a second and let the courtroom clear. You may proceed, Mr. Cook.
Good morning. My name is Frank Cook. I'm the appointed attorney for the defendant in this case, Rafael McGaughey. I was planning on explaining that that's an odd pronunciation of how his name is spelled, but that's what it is. Mr. McGaughey was convicted of being a felon in possession, and as a consequence of that, received a 15-year sentence. His conviction arose from his arrest on July 14th of 2004. That arrest occurred as a consequence of a search warrant executed at the house of his girlfriend, where they found him and found two guns in the apartment with him, one underneath his pillow. In our appeal, we raised two issues, one being an Apprendi issue related to the mandatory minimum sentence under 924E. We fully appreciate that the arguments advanced in support of that argument, our position, are not well favored by this court. And judging from the Supreme Court's most recent decision in Cunningham versus California, I'm guessing there's not a lot of future for them there, but that's at least where we're hoping to take them after we're done here. With regard to the first issue, we have taken issue with the warrant that was issued to search the home where Mr. McGaughey was found. At the trial level, Mr. McGaughey's attorney challenged that warrant, moved to quash the arrest, and essentially argued that the warrant itself, the affidavit submitted in support of the warrant, failed to establish probable cause when considered in light of the totality of the circumstances. In looking at her arguments in that regard and in looking at the affidavit that was submitted, I would agree with her in that. It appears that it's a very minimalist affidavit in terms of identifying anything with regard to the credibility of there was a confidential informant, a Jane Doe. She says simply that she knows Rafael McGaughey. She saw Rafael McGaughey at this particular address and saw him with two guns. And she said that he lives there and described his automobile. That was it. There was nothing else that she really provided in that regard. And nothing in the affidavit really indicating why the magistrate issuing it should have found her credible or worthy of belief. Certainly the information she provided in and of itself wasn't sort of a self-validating or proving kind of thing. And so we look under Gates and a variety of other cases to what was out there to corroborate what the confidential informant shared in her affidavit.
But even if we assume that the officer had some bias, was anything in the affidavit incorrect? I mean, I know you're arguing that some of the information was stale and the informant wasn't trustworthy, but was anything inaccurate in that affidavit?
Well, in terms of what was ultimately found, yes. I mean, she claimed that it was a rifle and a revolver, and what was ultimately found was something else. So from an after-the-fact perspective, we can say that.
You mean a handgun?
Right. I think she said a revolver. I think what was found was more of an automatic weapon.
But okay. All right.
Mr. Cook, if I may, I really am kind of puzzled by the approach that you've taken in this case. I've seen very few cases come through this court with a search, with a warrant this thin. I've seen very few cases come through this court, and maybe none, where there is a good faith exception possible argument this thin. Having written the Harju case a couple of months ago, I have a pretty good idea where our jurisprudence is on this. I frankly, as I read your materials, I couldn't see why you didn't just get up here and say, this is a bad search, there's no good faith exception, toss the search. And then you came up with this argument that said that the district judge should have held a hearing. Now, what really is a fairly ancillary matter? Why did you take the tack you did rather than just a frontal assault on the fact this is a really bad search?
I think that to some extent that is implicit in my argument, Your Honor, that part of the basis for her request for a motion or for the hearing was, look, this is really thin. There's not much going on here. Now, whether or not you're right, and actually I've thought about that in preparing for this argument today, but I do believe it is implicit in it, and certainly if there is the absence of probable cause and the affidavit itself is so thin, I think that in turn compounds the error of not granting a hearing on it and would justify sending it back at least for that purpose.
Do you know of any cases that would, I suppose I should really ask the government this, but do you know of any cases that would support affirmance with a warrant that's based on information that's, what was it, 9 days old, more than a week old?
There is an abundance of decisions out there that seem to support a variety of scenarios, stale and otherwise.
I'm wondering about.
I think one of the interesting things here, I think, too, is that we have a situation where the confidential informant said the guns are at this residence, or I saw them at this residence, but he transports them on occasion. So we send out warrants for every place he might be with regard to this, and it seems to me that no matter what, particularly if he's keeping the guns together, there's no way there can be probable cause for two different locations in terms of the guns are likely to be there now. And one thing I think is also curious about this, as I was pondering it, you look at what she said, what the confidential informant said was, he has guns at this house. Well, that's not criminal. I can say that I have guns at my house. I know any number of people who have guns at their house. The confidential informant did not reveal enough information about her own knowledge of the facts and circumstances of Rafael McGoy, apparently, to share with the officer who procured the affidavit from her that he had a prior conviction for a felony, that she knew that was criminal behavior, anything like that. That was provided by the officer himself, who, as part of his corroboration, which didn't really corroborate anything, determined that Mr. McGoy didn't have a valid firearms identification card and that he had previously been convicted of a felony. So in a lot of ways, the confidential informant didn't provide any basis to conclude that there was a crime there. That was largely provided by the officer himself, who, as was revealed in the trial, did have something of a history with Mr. McGoy, claimed that Mr. McGoy had hit him in the head with a bottle or thrown a bottle at him. So the officer claimed not to remember that the case had been dismissed, but I suspect police officers have longer memories than that.
Let's reserve a moment for rebuttal.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Ms. Fernandez-Harvath.
Good morning. Maribel Fernandez-Harvath on behalf of the United States. The government is respectfully requesting that this court affirm the defendant's conviction and sentence.
Can you answer my question?
Your Honor,
about 9-day-old information? It really does seem stale, doesn't it?
Your Honor, there is cases that have held where the information is up to 6 months old and the courts have found that it was not stale.
Is that when we're talking about finding a particular item in a particular place?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
I thought I had the case with me, Your Honor.
So there's one case? Is that what you...
No, there. I recalled one case that I argued up below. And United States versus Lamont says that the judges consider as one factor the age of the information. And the other factors that the court should consider is whether it's reliable or if the object of the search warrant will still be on the premises. And that's Batchelder, 824 F2nd 563-564. And in that case, they held that information that was 9 months old was not stale. There was also Grandstaff, 813 F2nd.
Are these all Seventh Circuits?
Yes, Your Honor. That was a Seventh Circuit case. And then I do have a Ninth Circuit case, Grandstaff, 813 F2nd 1353, which was upholding a search warrant based on 5-month-old information. Your Honor, in this case, the way the affidavit was written, it said within the past 7 days. And what the government argued below was the reason why that was done in that fashion is because the informant feared for her safety. And so while the information at most could be at 9 days old, it could also be 2 days old. And it is the government's position that based on the information that was provided by the informant in this case, which is the government's position that it was in fact detailed. The complaint for the affidavit states that the informant knew the defendant, that knew that the defendant was living in that apartment since May, that the informant saw the defendant in the apartment with 2 guns, that the defendant told the informant that the guns were for his protection. She gave a description of the building, gave a description of the defendant, and told the officer that he moved these guns back and forth from the apartment to the Hill area in Joliet in his car, gave a description of the car, and there's the license plate in the complaint for the affidavit. At that point, Officer Cardwell corroborates the description of the defendant, the description of the building. When he goes out to the building, that same car is there with the plates and the registration that come back to the defendant. And then at this point, in order to provide probable cause that, in fact, there is a crime occurring, he confirms that he is an aggravated felon. So the district court properly considered all of these factors that were located within the document, in addition to the fact that the informant appeared before the state judge, where the state judge could determine the credibility of the informant and the information given by the informant. And the officer went as well. And so, Your Honor, it's the government's position that the district court properly found that there was sufficient probable cause in the complaint within the four corners of the document, considering all of those factors together. Now, counsel has argued that the basis for counsel asking for a hearing was that the information was thin in the affidavit. And at the district court level, the defense attorney filed a motion to suppress and did not request a hearing. It was only in the reply at the first time that she requested a hearing, and the basis was a conclusory allegation stating that the officer had a history with the defendant, that this potential bias required a hearing to delve into exactly what omissions or falsehoods were represented to the issuing magistrate judge before a decision was made on the application. And the case law in this district is very clear that that is simply not enough. First, it's conclusory, it's nonspecific and non-detailed. And second, the defendant has failed to show how this omission is material. In other words, if the officer would have included in the affidavit that he had on a prior occasion arrested the defendant, that would have negated probable cause and that this judge wouldn't have issued the warrant. And the defendant has failed to meet its burden in that respect. And that's because the majority of the information was provided by the firsthand detailed observations of that informant. And finally, Your Honor, Your Honors, I would argue that the district court did properly enhance the defendant's sentence under 924E. And if there are no other questions, I will conclude.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Fernandez-Harvath. Mr. Cook?
I'm guessing the only thing I would say is that we've talked about corroboration here, and really nothing that was corroborated by Officer Cardwell corroborated the underlying crime that supposedly was the basis for obtaining the warrant. He corroborated that Mr. McGoy had a car. He corroborated that that car was occasionally at an address where the informant said it was, but that didn't corroborate a crime, and simply finding out that Mr. McGoy had a prior felony conviction and that he didn't have a valid firearms identification card doesn't constitute corroboration in this instance.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Cook. Our thanks to all counsel. Mr. Cook, you have an additional thanks to the court for accepting this appointment and ably representing the defendant.
Thank you.